Please stand by. We're about to begin. Good day and welcome to the National Employment Network Payments Conference Call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Ms. Kimberly Cutler, EN Payments Manager. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you so much. Welcome and thank you for attending the All EN Payments Call today, Tuesday, January 30th, 2018. As stated earlier, I am Kimberly Cutler, EN Payments Manager and host of the call. Joining me in our McLean office is Deborah Tennessee, Ticket Program Manager, and on behalf of the Social Security Administration, we have Natalie Sendorfer and Shannon Morgan. Again, thank you all for joining the call. The purpose of today's presentation is to provide insight into the payment process on the following agenda topics. We will discuss the announcements, e-pay status update, end-of-year statistics, time frame for submitting payment requests, updating EN information, SAM registration, payment denials, EN payment checklist, required and acceptable earnings documentation, payments for unassigned tickets, ticket program available resources, and at the end of the presentation, we will open the line for questions. For the announcements, you can check the status of ePay by viewing the announcement screen in the portal. The portal will display the announcement that ePay has started and a message when we complete processing an ePay file. Other announcements, time frames for submitting EN payments request. An EN shall request a payment no later than 24 months following the month the ticket holder's work and earnings met the criteria for SSA to make the payment. We will discuss that further in the call. Central Contract Registration, CCR, System for Award Management, or SAM registration, must be renewed and validated at least every 12 months. Again, we'll cover that in more detail a little later. The Ticket Program Available Resource section of this presentation highlights the service accommodations available to you at any time to reinforce payment principles and get other relevant payment information in between calls. The next slide, we're going to provide a status for the ePay file. Our current ePay file processing began on November the 23rd, and claims are processed by Social Security number instead of by DUNS. The current ePay file contains over 21,000 SSNs. As of last Wednesday, January the 24th, our EN payment staff processed the following. The total claims paid was 17,893. We paid 6,570 SSNs. And as of January 24th, the total amount paid was $11,561,909. And there we do have about three reminders for the ePay file. You may submit your payment request through the ticket portal instead of waiting for the ePay process to run. So, of course, if you have documentation or evidence of earnings, you do not have to wait for the ePay. You can still submit your payment request through the portal. And please ensure that your EN payment contact information is current. We email the EN payment contact for payment outreach messages and confirmation of possible split payments. And the third reminder is when submitting information to Employment Network service team about payments, please annotate your EN contact information for payments. To add a payment contact, please send a request to enservice@ssa.gov, and please make sure that you specify the name of the person and indicate the title you want them to have. Now, and just also remember that all payment contacts must have completed suitability. So those are just three quick reminders as it relates to when we're processing the ePay file and making sure that you have your payment contact information current. Next slide five, we would like to provide some end-of-year statistics. Okay. Now, for the end of the year, for the total dollars paid, we actually paid over $86 million, and we had a total of 32,272 denials that were processed. For the split payment, we actually processed 97 split payments. And of the 97 split payments, there's about a little over $39,000 that we paid out for split payments. And just wanted to note the number one denial reason was not eligible for payment due to look-back earnings. So just wanted to provide the end-of-year stats for you. Okay. And now we're going to move to slide six, which is going to speak to time frames for submitting EN payment request, conditions for receipt of payment. SSA expects ENs to provide initial and ongoing services and supports based on the IWP, or the individual work plan. After initial services, SSA requires the EN to contact the ticket holder at least quarterly to assess whether the ticket holder needs more services or support. SSA may contact an EN at any time to review the EN's records certifying the services provided, including documented attempts to provide preferred services or offer services. An EN shall be eligible for payment only for work milestones and outcomes achieved by ticket holders beginning the month following the month the ticket is assigned to the EN by TPM. An EN shall request a payment no later than 24 months following the month the ticket holder's work and earnings met the criteria for SSA to make the payment. SSA will not accept payment requests for periods outside this 24-month window. Now, there is a revised request for agreement or RFA that's available at the link provided on slide six. And if you have any questions about the changes, please contact the Ticket Program Agreement Help Desk via email, and that email is provided there. It's tpahelp@ssa.gov. And again, if you could, you just make sure that you visit the website, and there you will see the revised RFA with the rules and the conditions for receipt for payments within that 24-month window. Okay, now we're on slide seven, and this is going to focus on SAM registration. If the EN sees a diary reason of SAM/CCR registration expired, update required, the EN must sign into SAM.gov and renew and validate the information. It will then be renewed for a year. It can take a few days for the renewal to update, but the EN can contact the EN Payments Help Desk to notify TPM that they've completed the action. And there's a note here. If you need help renewing or updating your existing SAM entity registration, please review the Quick Start Guide for updating/renewing an entity. If you need help migrating the roles from your legacy account to your new SAM account, please also review the Quick Start Guide, but this time you're going to go for migrating roles. So it is very important that, again, you make sure that you are updating your SAM registration. And you may ask, what are yearly renewal requirements, or how do you keep your entity's record active? EN must renew and validate CCR registration at least every 12 months from the date the EN last certified or submitted the registration in SAM. ENs are responsible for updating sooner if the entity's information changes. The primary point of contact for your EN will receive an email alert for the renewal requirements for each registered entity at 60 days, then again 30 days and 15 days before expiration. If ENs do not renew, their CCR registration will expire. And one key thing to know is that the Social Security Administration cannot process EN payments without an active registration. So, again, please make sure that you are updating your SAM registration every 12 months because it will affect your payments. We will not be able to process any payments if your SAM registration is not active. Slide 9, we're going to focus on updating EN information. SSA should be notified of any staffing changes at the EN or the VREN agency. Most importantly, portal users, because the portal access has to be disabled on our end. Without SSA being notified that a person has left the EN, that person can still access the portal. The EN or VREN agency can see a list of contacts that have been provided to SSA by using the link below on the main menu of the portal. And here we actually provided what you're going to look for when you log in. This is how you would go check to see if everyone that should be listed is still listed to have access to the portal. But you want to make sure that you keep that information current. And for any changes for Employment Network, you want to make sure that you contact enservice@ssa.gov. And if you are a VREN agency, then you're going to contact the vr.helpdesk@ssa.gov. So any changes, make sure, for staff changes, please make sure that you are updating that information in a timely manner with SSA. On slide 10, we're going to talk about payment denials. ENs cannot resubmit same claim month through the ticket portal. EN will be required to resubmit via a payment request form. And what you will see, the denial reason will read no response to request for documentation, or it may read, you know, an inadequate certification of services. So a payment request from you must be submitted in writing to SSA by way of a payment request form and must contain all required documentation. And again, you would be requested to submit that manually. And the denial reason is used when the EN failed to respond to a request to submit additional information or documentation. So just wanted to really include this information in case you apply for or you submit for a payment request through the portal. Just wanted you to be mindful and aware that once that case is being denied, you would have to resubmit the payment request manually, so by fax or mail. And on slide 11, it continues with your payment denials. And just a few things we just wanted to bring to your attention. After submitting a payment request, a work case number is assigned to that particular request. When TPM receives a request for payment that does not include all of the required documentation or information, the request is either diarized or denied. If diarized, the senior payment specialist assigned to process the request notifies the payments help desk, and an email is sent to the person the EN has designated as their payments contact. The work case number assigned to that particular payment request is referenced in all TPM communications associated with the request. TPM gives the EN 9 business days to respond to the request. If the requested information or documentation is not submitted within 9 days, TPM denies the payment. And this also ties into when we speak of making sure that the EN's information or staff and contact information is correct. Because, again, when we send out the emails requesting additional information, it is going to be sent to the person that the EN has listed as the payments contact. So you want to make sure that it's always current, because we want to make sure that the ENs are receiving the email which gives them the opportunity to submit the requested information. And again, you only have 9 days to submit that. So it really just lines up of how important it is to make sure we have the correct contact information. And on slide 12, it actually gives you a screenshot of the ticket portal and where you look to see about the payment denials. Now, on slide 13, it gives you information about locating the EN payments checklist. I strongly encourage ENs, if you have not already, to take the time to find the EN payments checklist. And on slide 13, we actually give you the steps to actually go locate the checklist. It is very helpful. It provides a lot of information about the different types of payments, what the criteria is for each payment, We also have updated the checklist to include the 2018 trial work level and SGA amounts. So when opportunity, when you get a chance, again, this is just very helpful in knowing when to submit a payment, at, you know, your next available payment, for, you know, because one of the things we have to make sure is that you submit your payments in order. So using the checklist is a really good guide in helping you with that process of looking at it, what the earnings amounts are and when to submit the payment. It also talks about the benefit status that's needed for each payment. So, again, if you have the opportunity, please download or go locate the EN payment checklist as a resource. Moving on to slide 14, we're going to talk about required acceptable earnings documentation. What is required acceptable earnings documentation, you may ask? One of the first approved or acceptable earnings documentation would be pay stubs. And you want to make sure that your pay stubs include the employee's name, employee SSN. You also want to make sure that the pay stub includes the pay period beginning and ending date, and also the pay date. Also needed or required on the pay stubs will be the gross earnings and the taxes paid. So, again, we do sometimes get pay stubs, and this information is not included, but these are the requirements when you're submitting a pay stub as evidence of earnings for a payment. Another source for submitting evidence of earnings is using the work number. Now, the work number is a third-party source that verifies employment and income. Now, in some situations, the service is free. Other situations, depending on what information you're requesting, there may be a fee for service. But, again, this is a third-party source that you are able to use to collect information for earnings or earnings information. And with the work number, it allows requesters to receive immediate confirmation of an individual's employment and salary for verification purposes. The work number also collects week-by-week salary information as up-to-date as the last pay period and can go back for many years. So it's we've realized and we've noticed that this is a very helpful tool with EINs and submitting for payment requests. Also, it collects the length of employment, job titles, location information, and other kinds of human resource-related information. So if you have pay stubs, of course, that's the first evidence of earnings, but the work number is also an acceptable source. Continuing with what's required or acceptable earnings documentation is we have the employer-prepared earnings statement. The information that must be included on this form or on this statement would be the employee name, the employee SSN. Again, you need the pay period beginning and ending date along with the pay date, employer representative name, title, the name and address for the employer, and the box must be checked attesting that all withholdings have been made from employees' earnings. And this particular form must be signed by the employer representative. So sometimes we actually receive this form and it's signed by the EN. But for it to be acceptable proof of earnings, it must contain all the information provided here, but it must have the signature of a representative for the employer, not a representative for the EN. And the last slide for required acceptable earnings documentation that you can provide is the supplemental earnings statement. But I want to note here that the supplemental earnings statement cannot be sent in as a standalone for evidence of earnings. The supplemental earnings statement can be accompanied with a pay stub when certain information is missing from the pay stub. So on the form, it must have the EN organization name, DUNS number, employee's name, and Social Security number. Again, you're going to have the pay period beginning and ending date along with the pay date, the employer representative name, employer signature, and date. And again, you're going to want to check the box attesting that all withholdings have been made. So again, just make sure that if you are submitting the supplemental earnings statement, that it is accompanied with either the work number or pay stubs, but it cannot be submitted as a standalone for evidence of earnings. Moving on to slide 17, where we're going to focus on payments for unassigned tickets. When a ticket is unassigned by the beneficiary or the EN. So you may ask, what payments are available for unassigned tickets? Tickets unassigned by beneficiaries. An EN may have potential payments after ticket unassignment. However, the EN will be required to submit an EN certification of services form to determine number of eligible payments. So I'll read that one again. If the ticket is unassigned by the beneficiary, the EN may have potential payments after the ticket unassignment, but the EN will be required to submit an EN certification of services or a cost form to determine number of eligible payments. If the ticket is unassigned by Employment Network or a state VR acting as an EN, which is an ENVR, then the last payable month would be the month prior to ticket unassignment. So, again, if the ticket is unassigned by the Employment Network or the state VR acting as an EN, the last payable month will be the month prior to the ticket unassignment date. There will be no available payments after the unassignment month. Now here on slide 18, we talk about the available ticket program resources. And that's what we will finish this discussion today with, just a review of the sources of the resources that are available to you if you have further questions or need additional details about anything we've presented today. The available ticket program resources, you have the ticket portal. We have the Ticket to Work homepage. And you can locate that there at yourtickettowork.ssa.gov. And on our homepage, you have the Information Center, upcoming events, training, resource documents. It's a very valuable tool, and this is just wanted you to provide information where you can locate our Ticket to Work homepage. Other ticket portal resources we have is the Ticket Portal User Guide. This is a resource to have at your fingertips when using the ticket portal. This will be the best reference for you before contacting us with questions. When you're navigating through the ticket portal, your guide is going to help you with actually trying to locate exactly what you're looking for in the portal. So you do have that Ticket Portal User Guide. Another valuable resource is the EN Payments Help Desk. And the preferred method of tracking the status of submitted payment requests is to use the ticket portal and take advantage of the real-time updates. However, if an EN is unable to use the ticket portal for any reason, the EN can also, they have the option to send manual payment status inquiries to the EN Payments Help Desk. And that you can send to EN Payments Help Desk at yourtickettowork.ssa.gov, or you can call the toll-free number displayed on the screen here. And just please remember that if you are going to send an email, that the email inquiries must be password protected with the EN's personal identification number, or your PIN, that is on file with TPM. If for some reason you are not sure what that is, please call the EN Payments Help Desk, and we can provide that information. And inquiries must include the EN's DUNS number, the beneficiary's SSN, and the claim month for the payment. And please make sure that you allow at least five business days for a response. EANs can also obtain clarification on payment-related issues or explanations of how EN payment staff apply ticket policy or procedures to make payment and payment denial assessments. The EN Payments Help Desk will answer EN payment inquiries received through the Payments Help Desk phone line. Submit requests to the EN payment staff for payment reconsideration or for payment supervisor review of a payment issue. So anything that you have, you're related to, you know, a denial of a payment, please make sure that you're reaching out, again, to the EN Payments Help Desk. Outreach to ENs to obtain payment-related documentation when EN payment staff report missing or incomplete information from payment requests, the help desk, they are the ones that will reach out to you to let you know what's missing, what information is needed. Again, tying that back to making sure that all of your EN contact information is current, because the help desk will send an email, again, to the person that you have listed. So that's how you would find out as an EN when we have diarized the case and what information we may need. The Ticket Operation Helpline is available Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Both the Payment Help Desk and the System Support Desk are accessible by choosing Option 1 and Option 2, respectively. The Payment Help Desk is available to answer all your questions regarding payments, policy, or status under the ticket program, while the System Support Desk has representatives available to assist you with any technical issues you encounter using the ticket portal or questions about ticket assignments or TPR questions. So, again, just want to make sure the Payments Help Desk will be able to assist you with questions regarding payments. And then you have the System Support Desk that will be able to assist you with technical issues you encounter using the ticket portal, or they can answer questions about ticket assignments or ticket unassignments. And on the slide here, you actually can see where we have the phone number listed and the options that you would choose for which department. And you also have the emails address listed that you can send your inquiries to, remembering that all emails must be password protected. Now we will open the lines to receive your comments or any questions that you may have for us. So if you do not mind, Carrie, at this point or this time, well, first what we can do, Ms. Tennessee, do we have any questions in the chat?
We have a lot of questions in the chat. I'm trying to answer one right now, and maybe if I answer this, I don't have to finish typing this out. But this came from Jamie. Jamie had, I believe, originally asked a question about what was the status allowed. And allowed means that we have paid or processed the claim in Social Security system, but it has not cleared Treasury. And then Jamie also responded that she had submitted some claims on January 10th, and she just received an update on those. So my response to that is we have 30 days to process your claims submitted through the portal. As Kim mentioned at the very beginning of this call, we are also processing ePay, and we had over 21,000 SSNs on ePay. So we try to weigh it. We definitely every day check the portal to make sure that we do meet the 30-day time frame of processing claims. But in the meantime, we're trying to process all 21,000 of those SSNs to make sure that you get those payments. And so far, we've paid over $11 million through the ePay process. So when we are processing ePay, you may not get a response in 3 or 4 days like you would if we were not processing ePay. Claims processed through the portal may be a little bit slower, but let me say this. If you submit your claims through the portal and you submit evidence of earnings, those do take priority over other claims that are submitted. So just a reminder, when you submit your payment request, if you have earnings evidence, please submit it. That's one question that we had. Another person had a question about, Mary Lynn Lavoie asked about, is an average length of time and allowed, if it be there for, it depends on when we work it, as long as it doesn't pass the 30-day deadline. Okay, somebody asked this question. How does the ePay payments work? We have gotten payments from beneficiaries that I didn't realize were receiving over SGA, so I never submitted pay stubs. Any clarification will help. Well, let me tell you how ePay works. the first, and we will say this every time, you should submit your payment request through the portal. That's what the regs say, that in order for you to get a payment, you should submit a payment request. The reason why ePay was first created was because of the fact SSA stopped certification payment requests. So some of you ENs who have been around for a long time know that we had two types of payment requests, certification payment requests and evidentiary. Certification payment request was developed for those ENs who were unable to get copies of pay stubs from beneficiaries, and it was also for self-employment beneficiaries. SSA made the decision to stop that. We need the evidence. So what SSA decided to do, since SSA received earnings information, you know, from the field offices and from other sources, SSA made the decision that for those situations where it was almost impossible to get earnings information, as it was with the certification request, to come up with the ePay process. However, we still need, you know, this program is for beneficiaries too. And if we don't have your payment request and get those earnings into Social Security system, beneficiaries could be overpaid. You as an EN may be paid because you've given us evidence of earnings, but we have to get those beneficiaries' earnings in the system. So if you submit the pay stubs, we are entering those earnings, and those work CDRs we hope are being processed faster, to place beneficiaries in suspense to stop those recurring monthly payments, and also to place them in a status so you can get outcome payments faster. So, you know, if you have pay stubs, please send them in so that we can key those earnings. And that's the best thing I can tell you. We still need those pay stubs.
Thank you, Deborah. And so, Carrie, what we can do is we can see if there's anyone on the line that may have a question.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, press star 1 to ask a question. We'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions. And we'll take our first question from Bertha Street with Empower Tennessee.
Yes. Hello, everyone.
Hi.
I have a few questions. My first question just came about from what the representative just said. I have one of my consumers. She has no way to get her check stubs to me. She does not have knowledge of how to even use a computer, and we are not allowed to go onto her work system and print off her check stubs like she wants me to. So we can't do it that way. And I have been receiving payments. You know, I have to wait for you to give the payments to me, I guess, if I'm saying that right. So if you can give me further instructions on that, because she doesn't have knowledge of computers or how to get her check stubs.
Does she have check stubs?
She has check stubs with her job, but she has a system. She has to go in, create a username and password, and then be able to print her check stub off. That's okay for people that has computer knowledge. This person has no computer knowledge.
And no one on her job
will
still work out to get. Okay, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
No one on her job shows her how to get a copy of her pay stub. She doesn't even know what she's getting paid every payday.
She knows. I don't know how that goes. I don't know what she knows. What
okay.
I'm saying is, as an EN, this person,
okay.
You know, she's not originally from America. She has no way of, no knowledge of knowing all that.
Okay. I was just going to say, if she wasn't computer literate, to go in and get copies and things, or, you know, send them to you if she could Xerox a copy. But if you're saying she doesn't even get a copy herself, that won't work.
Right.
But you can go to a third party, the work number, and you can get earnings information from any of your clients going through the work number, third party. And we receive a lot of our earnings information from the work number.
Okay, that was going to be my next question. Thank you for bringing that up. When you say what work number, what do you mean by that? Is there a particular number or her job's work number?
This is Kimberly. Actually, it's like we said earlier in the presentation, so it's a third-party source, and you can actually access it just by going to theworknumber.com.
Theworknumber.com, okay.
Yes, ma'am.
They'll work him.
Yes, yeah. Yeah. Theworknumber.com, so just T-H-E, worknumber.com.
www.
Okay. Right. And once you log on to their site, then you just be able to follow the instructions there, and you'll be able to see what they offer and see if what you're needing, you know, how soon you want to get it or what information. And like I said before, some of the services are free, but it is definitely an acceptable source of earning. So that may be the route that you can take in getting
okay.
Information for her earnings.
Yes, ma'am. I have one more question.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I have one more question.
Okay.
Now, one of my consumers, she's a teacher. Her check stubs just say the 15th and the 30th or the 31st. There is no beginning and ending. She gets paid that time of the month, 15th and 30th or 31st, depends on how many days are in the month. How do I handle that one? Like when it's asked for the beginning and the ending days?
I don't have to do that.
Right.
You already have a pay period there. It's not stating the beginning and ending, but if it's the 15th and 31st, that is her pay period right there. So we know
right.
It's the 1st to the 15th, and it's the 16th through the 31st. And, you know, we can figure that out.
Yeah. And then you can submit the...
I'm sorry. Go ahead,
ma'am. No, you go ahead.
No, what I usually do is I go in and I put in for the beginning, I put the 1st of the month, and for the end, I put in the 14th of the month, and then I say payday the 15th of the month.
Is that the payday?
That's 15th? What's on the check stub. The payday is the 15th.
Okay.
That's the only thing on the check stub, the date, payday, the date that she gets paid.
Oh,
no,
the payday of the 15th.
The date
okay,
of.
I got it.
Yes.
Okay.
That's been working out so far. Is it okay to keep doing it that way?
Yeah, you're doing fine.
Okay.
That's fine.
Okay. Thank you. No more questions. Thank you, ladies.
Okay. That's fine. I have a question in the chat that I would like to read. This is from Tracy. I am newly suitable and have never submitted a ticket for payment. The last suitable person left, and when they did, we stopped receiving payment. I tried to use the help desk to get details on how to start doing claims while my portal access is getting established but didn't get help. Is there another way to get help? Yes, Tracy, and not only for you but for anyone on this call who needs any type of help in trying to figure out how to submit payments or have any questions about payment policies or whatever. We have a group who actually Maximus has a number of modules where we have a training for ENs and training on payments is one of those. So if you would like to have training on payments, please contact your EN service, contact EN service at ssa.gov and let them know that you would like to receive training on payments. And they will notify Maximus and someone will contact you.
Okay, thank you. And, Carrie, do we have any other questions on the line?
And we'll take our next question from Sharon Newman with an Alliance of Diversity.
Good afternoon, everyone. How do I find a checklist for payments? I keep going on the EN portal. Is it not there?
No, you would go to our homepage on the Ticket to Work website.
Okay.
I'll try to give you that. But it's,
yeah, because
yeah,
I went
so
on there too, and I couldn't find it.
Okay, if you go, if you go to yourtickettowork.ssa.gov,
okay,
and at the top you would choose information centers at the top menu.
Okay.
And then once you choose that, on the left side, I think you would choose resource documents.
Okay.
And then you'll see the EN Payments Checklist Guide. So I think you have to scroll down towards the bottom.
Okay.
On the Payments Resources,
okay.
And then you'll see. Okay.
And I see.
And do you see?
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, thank you so much, lady.
You're welcome.
I have another question. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Carrie.
We'll take our next question from Jeff Barrett with Options Plus.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Yes, you make it sound so easy, but I have several consumers who don't want to send in their pay stubs. One of them is working, making a very good living. He's steady, and he feels that it's intrusive. It's a part of being disabled he doesn't like. So he said, you go ahead and maintain the ticket, and I'll maintain my job. And, you know, I call them periodically, but some of those calls are welcome, some are not. But I worry about whether I'm going to be reimbursed for being there. I also try to make sure that he's reminded that he has to stay in touch with his Social Security office so that he doesn't, he doesn't receive payments he's not supposed to. And I'm in Broward, and that office has cut people off for working steadily. So I make sure he documents that he's maintaining his ticket program. But I've got another one who's newer and just went to work for Publix. They do get pay stubs, but she doesn't know how to get pay stubs to me. And that's become a problem. A third one is working, but gets a personal check from the employer. There are no dates on it other than the date of pay. So I don't get a beginning and ending pay period when she does send me her copies of those checks, which once they go in the bank, they're gone. So it's very difficult to keep track of some of these that have very individual or an Uber driver who gets a very long, complicated statement but doesn't get a pay stub. He gets paid directly in the bank and has to go online to see his statement. So he doesn't have pay stubs that he can easily send to me. And he's by the way, he's losing money on his expenses. So
you had three different situations right there. One, you said that, and we did find this to be true for a number of PNs. Once some beneficiaries go to work, once they're established in a job for a period of time, they don't want any contact with anybody. But have you gotten any? That's the first situation that you mentioned. Have you gotten any payments for that beneficiary at all?
Actually, I have. I haven't year, but I did last year.
Okay. And is he or she still receiving a Social Security benefit payment?
No. We made sure that stopped. I'm very protective of my people, so as long as I know that their status on ticket to work is protected, then I'm doing my job. And if they have any problem at work, and this guy did change jobs once in the middle of things, and I helped him with that. But he wants me to be available when he wants me to be available. Other than that, I'm useless.
Yeah. No, you're doing what you're supposed to do. This situation is one that Kim and I both mentioned. You could go to a third party, the work number, and if you can go right out on the website, theworknumber.com, you could see what services they have available, and you can get earnings information that way. In the situation where you have submitted payment requests and we've seen that you have been doing it consistently, more than likely, if that beneficiary is working and has earnings and they meet the other requirements for ticket, they may be on our e-pay file. And EINs have to remember earnings is not the only requirement to get a payment. I get that all the time that they're working at this level. That's why I ask you whether they were getting a benefit payment, because if they're in current pay status and maybe maybe it's time for them to be in an outcome status, like suspense due to work or earnings. Maybe their payment status needs to be updated. So that's one way. Or the other one where you mentioned that they're getting a check, that is suspect because we don't know if taxes are being taken out, whether FICA is being paid, whether Medicare is being paid.
Oh, I can tell you straight out that they're being treated like independent contractors and nothing is being taken out.
Well, independent contractors, that's like self-employment, so you can't submit that anyway. The only way those earnings would come to us is if that beneficiary, does their income tax and the IRS gets that information and Social Security would perhaps get it that way. Or if that beneficiary, and I'm quite sure that they're not, going to Social Security because they would have to show their gross earnings, expenses, and all that. So the only way you would probably get any type of payment for that beneficiary would probably be by way of e-pay because it sounds like it would be a self-employment.
That's typical of Uber and Lyft drivers, which I'm sure there are a lot of them out there.
Oh, yeah.
I have one guy who went to work for both Lyft and Uber, and he submitted earning statements that he got from Uber, and they found that he had prior earnings. Well, when I got a hold of his paperwork, he was actually losing money. And in fact, he went through a car. His losses were greater than his earnings. I could never get his status reversed so that he would get his benefits. And when I got him to where he was earning money at that business, I wasn't eligible. And this took a lot. I'm basically working with self-employed, which is time-consuming. I couldn't get reimbursed because the look-back would not be corrected.
Okay.
What do we do with something like that?
It's a field office. I mean, earnings that we ticket to work at Maximus, we rely on Social Security records to make decisions and make payment determinations or payment denials. So if it's incorrect information that Social Security has, the beneficiary would have to go through the field office to get that corrected.
I don't know if you're familiar with Broward County, but the director of that office will not talk to us. And they actually took one of my people off Social Security claiming he was making a living and couldn't be disabled. The man is legally blind. We set up a workstation for him. It was sheltered employment. He was making very good money, but they cut him off. And it went to Social Security Court. They ordered them to reinstate him. They refused. Then we had to go to appellate, and they ordered the court to reinstate him directly. It was a several-year battle where this guy got no benefits for years because he went back to work in sheltered employment. This is classic of Broward County Social Security Office. They would not go back and correct anything. They are very hostile to Ticket to Work and to Social Security recipients.
Wow.
So I don't know what to tell you, but that's what we're dealing with in this county.
Okay. Well, we can pass that information up the line.
I hope so.
But, okay.
Somebody needs to check it out. I had three clients in my little caseload that went through this with them.
Broward County.
Yep, done for. We'll definitely pass that information.
Okay.
We'll definitely pass that information on. Thank you, Jeff.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
I have one question in the chat from Sarah, and this is the question. Do the policies for unassigned beneficiaries apply to all ENs, especially CDS model ENs? If you're a CDS EN, you receive a separate TPA that address unassignments, whether it was the EN who unassigned the ticket or the beneficiary that unassigned the ticket. If you are CDS EN, you are not eligible for any payments after the ticket is unassigned, no matter who unassigns the ticket. The rules are different for traditional ENs. If the ticket is unassigned by the benefit, let me deal with the easy way first. If the EN unassigns the ticket, the EN is not eligible for any payments after ticket assignment. If the beneficiary unassigns the ticket, what we will do is an assessment. You will have to submit to us. Kim, could you go over the process for beneficiary unassignment?
Right. If the ticket is unassigned from it's a traditional EN and the beneficiary unassigns the ticket, when an EN submits for a payment request for a claim month after the unassignment date, the EN will also be required to submit a certification of services form or a cost. And once we receive that information, there will be a review of that information and a determination will be made of possible payments. And once the determination has been made, the EN will be notified of the number of available payments. So the key thing is again, once the ticket is unassigned from a beneficiary, from an EN by a beneficiary, when you, as an EN, traditional EN, when you submit for payment for that beneficiary, you would need to include certification of services. If the ticket is assigned from a traditional EN by the EN, then as Deborah said, then there are no longer available payments. For CDS EN, Consumer Directed Services EN, when a ticket is unassigned, regardless of who the requester is for the unassignment, then there are no longer, there are no more available payments after the ticket unassignment date. But there is, so when the ticket is unassigned from the beneficiary, in order to even have us review for possible payments, you will need to submit a certification of services.
Cheryl has a question. Should an EN submit payment requests for an individual who's enrolled in training and not working? The answer is no. The requirement for a payment is the beneficiary must have wages from work or earnings from work, not from training. And you basically said it in your question, not working yet. That's the key word. Once they start working, yes, you can submit your payment request if they have earnings from work. But if they're in training and not working, no.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Do we have any other questions on the line, Carrie?
And we'll take our next question from Steve Gerke with SKG Career Services.
Hello, everybody. I have a question. I've run into a situation a couple times over the years. I have an individual that, in terms of payments, she's been working since February of 2017, and my last contact verbally with her was in March, and I've attempted to contact her via phone, email, text messages ever since then. Okay, so I've did a work number on her, and I know that she's working way over SGA and has been all this time. However, when I talked to Maximus about this, her help desk, they said, well, I need to call her. Well, obviously that's not working. And they wanted me to call her to find, because they say she's on benefits. She's in current pay. So I asked the help desk, well, that means then she's probably being overpaid, correct? He totally avoided this. He just said, well, no, just need to call her. She's on some kind of federal benefits. Well, unless either she's on SSDI, which I know she's on, what other benefits could she be on and still be making that type of income?
Okay.
And my question is, how do I get paid $4,500 that I'm not getting paid?
Wait a minute. What kind of – are you – submitting what type of payment request, or have you submitted any payment request?
Yes, I have. I've collected all phase ones. I'm into outcome payments. The last time I got paid an outcome payment was May of 2016.
Okay. I didn't hear all of this because my chat room just crashed on me. So if you're submitting requests to Deborah through the chat room, she's not getting them. I didn't hear all of it, but it's possible sometimes that a beneficiary, any outcome claim, I mean, any outcome payment, yes.
I've gotten seven outcome payments, and then
okay.
She was out of work, and then she started back again in February of 17, and she's at way over SGA, and all of my payment requests have been denied. I stopped making payment requests in October.
What was your denial reason?
It was a code two. She's in current pay.
That's the reason you're not getting paid. Until the field offices perform a work CDR and place her back into suspense due to work or earnings, again, payments has more than one requirement. Earnings is just one part of it. So she may have earnings at SGA, but for you to get an outcome payment, the beneficiary must be in suspense or non-pay due to work or earnings.
I understand all that. Okay. However, I sent her a letter saying I think she may be being overpaid. No response from her. I sent that back in November.
Mm-hmm.
I've left her messages. No response.
Mm-hmm.
And so is you know she's probably being overpaid. Is that correct?
Okay. Yes. Definitely.
The last person I talked to at Maximus kind of gave me this vague, well, you need to, she's on some kind of federal benefit, but I said, well, then she's probably being overpaid. He just avoided the question. So I just wanted to verify that because, you know, I've been working with her for about 4 years, and all of a sudden she's not contacting me, and I don't know why, but she's going to be in trouble.
Yes, she definitely is. And, you know, you may not be able to get this now, but this is what I said earlier about ENs. If you can at all get any pay stubs or earnings through the work number, send them
in
to us. We will get them to the right place. So these, especially for beneficiaries, the priority cases for us to process through the portal of those cases where the beneficiary has earnings at SGA, you provide us with the evidence, and the beneficiary is current pay status because we know they're okay.
Yeah, I have I have a current work number on her that I ran, you know, and she's actually still working this month. So
So are you saying
I should submit that work number somehow?
If you get us any evidence of earnings in, we can, and she's at an SGA level, we will initiate the process for the field office to take a look at those earnings and start a work CDR and place her in suspense and stop those payments. And once she is placed in suspense and as long as she continues to have earnings at SGA, outcome payments would be payable to you.
Well, let me tell you this. I have been submitting the work number for months, every month.
Okay.
The last one was October, I think. So that doesn't seem to have been triggering anything, so.
Okay, what you do is send that to the help desk.
Okay.
Send that information to the help desk because you can't give us any PII over the phone or anything, but notify the help desk to get that to our payments group, and we'll take a look at that because we may have already started it and you may not know it, but because it does take a while for them to perform those work CDRs, but at least Maximus is actually performing the process of the front-end process of getting those earnings in the SSA system where the field offices have to work CDRs. And, again, our priority cases are those where beneficiaries are at SGA and they are in current pay. And as long as
what should I send to the help desk to help them out here?
I'm just that, you know, based on – you could do a email based on the you were told by Deborah Tennessee during the all EM payments call to submit the SSN for so-and-so, whoever it is, and you have previously submitted earnings for the work number. Please send to the EM payments department. And the EM payments manager,
please refer to what?
Please send to the EM payments department, Kimberly Cutler.
Okay.
And she's the manager of EM payments. She's on this call. She's the host of this call. She will know what it is. And when she gets it, she'll take a look and do some research on that. Okay.
And how does her last name spell?
Okay, it's Cutler. Cutler.
Okay, and so I need to actually send the work number information, and I need to encrypt it and all that.
Right. You've sent it previously.
I don't. I think the last month I attempted was October. I've sent months of them. I've sent since February. I've been sending them, but been denied every month.
Okay, right. Just send me to the help desk. Just password protect the SSN, and just send it with the claim months that you're referring to. Because if we already have the information in the database, I can pull that and look at it. But just understand, we're looking at whatever you sent last. So
okay.
We can review that, and then if you have, let me research that part and see why those payments are being denied. And if there's, if it reveals something else, then you can send in additional months. But let's just look at what you've already sent first to see what's going on.
Okay, so should I just send it directly to Kimberly then?
Oh, you send it to the EN payments. Okay.
EN payments. And then actually the note that I need to – what do I need to exactly say?
Well, in the body of the email, you could just say, please forward information to Kimberly Cutler.
Okay. Perfect.
And then I'll be on the lookout for it so I'll know what it is.
Okay.
And you did say
– awesome.
You said you've been submitting this and getting denials. Was it an OT
denial? Yeah, I've
gotten
all code twos.
Okay, that's current pay. Yeah, that needs to be placed in suspense. Okay, we know what to do.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, so are you good with the chat?
Yes, okay, good with the chat.
Okay. Carrie, do we have any calls holding right now or any questions?
We have about 10 questions left in the queue.
We can take four more.
Okay, we'll go ahead and we'll take about four more questions.
Okay, we'll take our next question from Linda Bettino with Ticket to Success.
Okay. Hi, Linda.
Hi. How are you? Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay. I have a question I need a clarification on the time frames that you're talking about, the 24-month time frame. We do have individuals that are self-employed, and I know we don't submit those through the portal. But we encourage individuals that are working, self-employed, that they complete their taxes each year. Some file extensions, some don't file them on a timely basis like they need to. We've had an individual where they waited 2 years to be able to file. Now, in that 24-month time frame, are we going to be able to get paid on those individuals since it's something a little different than what the normal billing is?
I think we would have to handle those on a case-by-case basis and check with the SSA's policy group, the group that came up with this policy modification. It depends.
Yeah, because I know it's usually 18 to 24 months or more for us to be able to get paid on those that are self-employed.
On some of those, we may have those SSNs on our ePay file, but they may not have the right pay status, too. And we don't give you denials on ePay, so you wouldn't know that. So, at the point where we would, the beneficiary would be retroactively placed into suspense, we would have to do that on a case-by-case basis.
Okay.
And if it wasn't employment one, but one where you had consistently submitted request through the portal or manually and were denied due to current pay, again, those we would have to look at.
Okay.
This is Kimberly. Just make sure, you are aware that it's the self-employed employed case. So just make sure that you submit a payment request within that 24-month time frame. So even though you're kind of waiting, don't wait until after the 24th month. At least just go ahead and submit because, again, you never know exactly when it may post in our system.
Okay, but so we try to collect the tax documents, and then we'll try to send them into Social Security whenever we get them. through the field office, but you know, like
okay.
I say, some of them don't file timely, and we don't want it to jeopardize. So you would encourage me to file within that 24 months, even if I don't have the evidence?
Well, I'm just saying that sometimes it could, they could, like you said, they may not bring it to you. I'm not sure what your process is, but it could be that the information has been populated. So I'd rather you at least try to submit for a payment rather than waiting and run that risk of being outside of the 24-month window.
All right. So if it's getting close and we haven't got the evidence and we know that they haven't filed.
Well, if you know they haven't filed, then that's a little different, I guess. Like, I guess, like I said, depending on the process, seems like you have a good tracking process in place.
Yes.
So in that case, that's fine. It's one of the ones where you're like, it's self-employed. I don't know if they filed their taxes yet. But if you know, you're on it, then that's fine. Then you could just wait.
Okay, or I might email you guys and say, I know I have someone, but they're not submitting. The other question, I know several people put it in the chat, and I've asked this several questions, several times in the chat, too. The 2018 payment at a glance and earning estimators, those, are they going to be updated and accessible on your ticket to work?
Yes, those will be updated. So we have not received the 2018 payment rates yet. We are anticipating that we will receive that in the next couple of days. And as soon as we receive that information, we will update the website with that information, those forms.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And we'll take our next question from Odell Tiller with Orange Grove Center.
Hello.
Hi, Mr. Tiller.
I've been fortunate enough for the past couple of years to have a CWIC to manage our ticket to work program. But since she resigned, I find myself need a refresher, so I kind of appreciate this training right here. Let me ask, if I have a person that's completed the milestone outcomes and is working at SGA level and payments
mm-hmm.
have stopped, do Social Security unassign that ticket, or should I unassign that ticket? How do that work?
Oh, you don't unassign the ticket. Have you gotten maximum payments on the ticket?
Well,
have you gotten
once
all
you reach our outcomes, 60 months, right?
Have you gotten, is it an SSI or SSDI beneficiary?
SSDI. Mm-hmm.
So have you received 36 outcomes for that beneficiary?
I have to check it and see, but it seems to me once I looked at this person's on through the portal that no, I hadn't reached all 36 outcome payments.
Then you don't need to unassign.
Okay. Go ahead.
Unless you're not working with them anymore, or I mean, the maximum dollar amount on a ticket is for phase one milestones, phase two milestones, and outcome payments. So the value of the ticket is still open until at least we pay all the outcomes on it, or the ticket is terminated and we start all over again. So if payments have stopped, it may be due to the fact that the beneficiary is not in suspense anymore. They may have gone back in current pay, and you know, and if they're back at SGA level, then and they may be overpayment if they are at SGA level and receiving a federal monthly benefit payment, they need to be placed in suspense. So if you have evidence of earnings for that beneficiary, submit your payment request, and we'll take it from there to make sure that those earnings go into the right system.
Okay. So do I... do I have to keep up with all the check stuff during the 36 months?
Do you have to do what? I didn't get all that. Do you have to keep up with this pay stuff?
Right.
Yes. Mr. Tiller, yes. If you have access to the pay stub, that's the primary evidence of earnings. So, yes, if you have access to the pay stubs, you would need to send them in for payment. And collecting the pay stubs, it's again, like I said, it's the primary evidence of earnings. So there may be earnings that have not updated in SSA's database yet, but you have the evidence of earning. So we strongly encourage that you have the pay stubs to always submit that in for your payment request.
Okay. I'm sorry. I'm working with someone that's going through suitability that's going to work with me, and she have a question for you. This is Barbara.
Thank you for taking my question. My question is it okay for someone to work online where maybe they might not be paying taxes and all that?
No.
No, I think that's more of a self-employed type person.
And
that's considered a contract. That's a certification of service. Certification of services payment.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah, so we no longer accept those types of payments. You would have to wait till they file, eventually file taxes, and that information is updated in the system.
Okay, so it's not going to be allowed for them to work online, where they work from home, but for an online services.
If they're working as an independent contractor, then that's self-employed. Now, if they're working from home and actually it's a job that's allowing them to work from home and they're receiving pay, every week or 2 weeks or monthly, then that's different, because then you would just provide evidence of earnings. But if it's, they're working as an independent contractor, then that's self-employed.
Okay. All right.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And we'll take our next question from Hope Meng with Options Unlimited.
Hi, Hope.
Hello.
Hope, are you? Hi.
I was on mute. So I actually have three questions. The first is the work number. I put it in the chat, but somebody answered that one. Okay.
I guess
so. The second question, thank you. The second question is, the first thing in this call, you guys said that the person who receives the payment has to be suitable. So is that like my bookkeeper who gets like the payments in our, money system?
Anyone that's handling any type of personal identifiable information must clear suitability.
Okay. She doesn't actually work with... Yes, so she doesn't work with the beneficiary itself. She just receives the money. Does that make sense?
Does she have access to their personal identifiable information?
I mean, other than their name and the payment that comes through from you guys.
Yeah, right. That's personal identifiable information. Yes, they would need to have clear suitability.
Okay, thank you. And the third one is, I have several people who make under SGA, but they still want me to keep the ticket. So if I know that they're going to be denied payment, and should I go ahead and submit their pay stubs anyway?
To get the initial payments, the first set of milestones, the earnings requirement is trial work level. So if you have someone who's working under SGA, but they haven't received any of the phase one milestones, then yes, I would encourage you to submit. And, of course, the goal of the program is for individuals to become financially independent, so they should be working towards SGA level earnings. But if you have someone who's not, then that would be a decision that you would make as to whether or not you want to continue providing services. But if you know that you've already received your phase one milestones and the criteria for the next payment, the earnings amount would be SGA, and if this person is not at SGA, then no, there's no reason for you to continue to submit for payments, because then they would just be denied.
Right. I'm like, oh, my gosh. But, yeah. Okay.
Right.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, Karen, I think we'll take one more call or one more question.
Okay, we'll take our final question from Hamid Hajabian with HH Employment Training for the Deaf.
Hi.
Hi, how are you? This call is being interpreted. Hi, this is Hamid. I do have one consumer here in Texas who is transferring out of state, actually moving to Illinois, into Chicago. Can I continue to service them? They're continuing. Can I continue for the next 3 months and then transfer their work to Chicago?
Yes, if you have a beneficiary that's moving out of state, as long as you are able to provide them with the needed services, you can continue to provide the services for that beneficiary.
Oh, okay. Perfect. That's short and sweet. Perfect. That's what I needed to know. Thanks much.
You're very welcome.
Okay.
And Carrie, so that we're going to go ahead and conclude today's call. Thank you all for joining us on the call today. Thank you all so much for your very good questions via the phone and through the chat. Please remember, if you have some questions that were not answered, please reach out to our EN Payments Help Desk, and they will be able to assist you with any payment-related questions. So, again, thank you all, and enjoy the rest of your day.
This concludes today's call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.